Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled out to my Chevrolet. I climbed down up inside. The choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, I'm here at your service to help you with any car questions, car problems, motorhomes, horse trailers, tires, oil questions, coolant questions, spark plug questions, just about anything that you have. I'm pretty sure we'll have some factual data or some opinion, or if we don't know, we'll just tell you. We don't know. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. Bob is a great guy. He is a Vietnam veteran. He flew jets in Vietnam. He's honest. He's dependable. And like all the shops that I represent as the best in Phoenix, he knows right from wrong. And he's not afraid to stand up and raise his hand and say, hey, that's not good. Bob can handle anything you've got with respect to an automatic transmission, standard transmission. They can do all kinds of work on trucks, cars, motorhomes, 4x4s. So they're located in Tempe on McClintock, just north of University, on McClintock between University and the 202. No matter where you live, they're worth the drive, and certainly you can say that Mark sent you. All right, Mother's Day's right around the corner, and I have two pieces of advice for the guys out there. Piece of advice number one, don't say to your wife, you're not my mother. Because that is not going to work. Because the answer is always the same. Well, then why don't you act like I'm not your, just don't say it. That's just a bad thing to say. And that's going to be, just put you in the doghouse for, the weekend of Mother's Day. But if you're looking for a great gift for your wife or your mother, I'll tell you a secret, and it's not really a secret, but really, I think most women enjoy being pampered, and a massage is something that I think most of them agree to. My wife Renee has been raving about this massage therapist that she's been going to, and actually my daughter Andy and my wife Renee both are. So I thought this might be a great time to help you guys out if you're looking for that special gift. Now, if you live in the East Valley, Elizabeth Kazan from At Ease Massage Sanctuary, and it's A-T and then E apostrophe S. So E is like Elizabeth. At Elizabeth's Massage Sanctuary, At Ease, located at the 101 and Warner Road in Tempe. Elizabeth has all kinds of accolades from appreciative patrons and students and peers over the years, yet one comment stands out from all the rest. A patron once wrote that while he knew he was the last appointment in a long day of massages, he always felt like he was Elizabeth's only client of the day. And one other compliment, my younger daughter, Andy, she's a massage therapist herself. So when she comes home and she says, Elizabeth is really good, then that comes from a peer. That comes from somebody who knows the difference between good and bad. So if you want that special lady come Mother's Day to feel special, you can treat her to a massage at Ease Massage Sanctuary, Warner and 101. And if you want any more information, just email me at mark@marksalem.com and I'll help you out. All right, that's past us.
Caller, Charlotte.
The Ethics Award. I'm proud to tell you that virtually every single year, one or more of my shops, my repair shops, is on the Better Business Bureau Ethics Award. Now, the finalist in the category 1 through 10 employees was Kurtz Auto Repair. He didn't win, but he was a finalist. Now, when it comes to category 2, 11 to 20 employees, the winner was Guido's Auto Service Centers, 56th and Thomas. And they have been a part of our program for 10, 15, maybe 20 years. So I'm really proud to tell you that our guys have been recognized because they're ethical and because they're not going to take advantage of you, our guys and our ladies, because we do have some shops that are operated and managed and owned by ladies. So that makes a big difference. Charlotte, good morning to you. What can we do for you this morning?
Good morning. Well, I have a Honda 93 Honda Accord sedan, and it has a 2.2 engine in it. The the shop has replaced the fuel pump hard, or even sometimes when I don't brake really hard, but when I'm coming to a stop and the tank is down to a half or below, the car stalls. And it does it consistently. And so I'm wondering, is there anything else that I can have them do about it, or that they might be able to think about doing?
Well, and they already replaced the fuel pump, you said.
Yes, they replaced the fuel pump and two filters.
Okay. It probably won't be a filter. Is it like from a quarter tank and lower you have that problem, Charlotte?
No, it's a half tank. Usually, if it's a half tank or below, then it stalls when I brake to stop at a
okay.
stop sign.
But if it's a half tank or above, it never stalls.
It doesn't do it. That's right.
Okay. Charlotte, I want you to picture a tub that's about 12 inches tall. Okay? The fuel pump comes in from the top. The fuel pump is connected typically with a short rubber hose, and the fuel so there's a metal tube that comes down, then there's a rubber hose, and then there's the fuel pump. And the fuel pump is a cylinder about the size of silver dollars. It's about 3 inches long, and it has a nipple on one end and a nipple on the other end. So the fuel pump is electronically energized. Now, the bottom of the fuel pump, which is the suction side, comes out of the bottom, and then there's a sock. This literally, it looks like a sock that sits on the bottom of the tank. We want it to pull fuel from that lowest part. Now, because the fuel pump sits in the middle between the top of the pipe inside the tank now and the sock on the bottom, there's typically some rubber on the top and the bottom of the fuel pump to connect it. And if that rubber is not new, or if that rubber is not tight, then it'll suck air instead of fuel. Now, sometimes what will happen is that the fuel will go up and leak out even before it gets to the front of the engine. But in your particular case, it only needs to suck air for just a second for the engine to die.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you need to go back to them. Did they represent to you that the fuel pump would take care of your problem?
Well, yeah. But, okay. You know, cars are funny things. There's so many things and so many parts. I think they were trying to do a good job.
Well, I know you're trying to be nice, but let's look at the facts. Okay? You describe this absolutely perfectly. You even know exactly where on the fuel line that this symptom's going to come and go. Anybody worth their salt understands that this is a fuel starvation problem created by when you hit the brake, the gas sloshes to the front of the tank and the fuel pump sucks air.
Oh.
So, You need to go back nicely, and what you don't want to do, Charlotte, is say the guy on the radio said this. This is not
no,
it.
No, I won't. Oh, goodness, no.
You say to them, you actually, we talked about this, and you represented to me that you thought this would take care of it, and it hasn't. And so what I've done is I've got the tank just below half, and I'd like to take the technician for a ride and demonstrate what I'm talking
okay.
about. And then we're going to pull into a gas station, and I'm going to put 5 gallons in. And then we're going to go drive it again. Now, I promise not to have him for more than 20 minutes. But I want to demonstrate both sides of the issue. And I don't know, but... And then this is where you kind of... But I was talking to somebody who's a former Honda mechanic. And he said that maybe there was an air leak or the baffle inside the fuel tank was bad. The baffle? There may be a baffle in the fuel pump. Or in the fuel tank, or he thought maybe that it was sucking air somewhere around the fuel pump connections.
Oh,
so,
okay.
I, because I still have the problem, may I ask that you readdress it again? Could we look at this again, or would you be willing to look at this again? Now, if they say yes, you're home free. And then say to them, please don't spend any of my money until you call me, okay? That's a nice way to say you don't have my permission to spend a bunch of my money.
Mm-hmm.
Then, if they say no, then what you do is you go have it fixed. And once you have it fixed, then you can... Did you pay with a credit card?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Because you can send a letter to MasterCharge, Visa, Discover, American Express, whatever. And basically you say, on this day at this time, you'll see that this repair order says that when I stop abruptly with half tank or less... The engine dies. They said it was a fuel pump, and here's a bill for $700 or $800. It didn't fix it. And I offered them the opportunity on this date at this time. I offered them an opportunity to look at it again. They said no. So I took it to another shop. and this shop has fixed the repair, and you'll notice here is their explanation. So the explanation for the repair is actually a duplication of what they did before. So I don't want to pay the first bill because the first bill did nothing for me and they did not diagnose it or repair it correctly. Now, you have to dispute the whole bill. But when he calls you, you can say to him, you know what? I know that I got a new fuel pump. If you want, I'll pay for the fuel pump, but I don't want to pay for any of the labor. Basically, you've cut his bill in half, and he's a stupid shop owner if he doesn't take that agreement you're offering him. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh, it does.
Now you have to call me back and tell me how it all turned out, okay?
Okay.
What part of town do you live in?
I live in Mesa.
Okay. Thompson's Auto Repair, Stapley in Maine? Is that close?
Stapley. Well, anything's close when you're trying to get your car fixed.
Okay. All right. Well, I would go to Thompson's at Stapley and Main, just east of Stapley on Main Street on the south side of the road. Thompson's is run by Brian and Thelma, a married couple. They're the nicest people in the whole world, and you can tell them that you and I spoke about this.
Okay.
Is that right?
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Good luck to you, Charlotte. 602.
Thank you.
You betcha. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, you can call us. 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, you can call on our dime. And that phone number is 888-960-9696. Can't make it any easier than that. This is 960 AM, so 888-960-9696. That's the toll-free number if you have a car question, no matter where you're listening to the show at. We're happy to help you.
1 minute.
We also want to remind you that Larry Harker's Auto Repair on the other side of town at 38th Avenue and Indian School is a great place. Their technicians have been with them many years. They're a trusted source for quality parts at affordable prices. They've been around a very long time, and Bob and Ellen, who run Larry Harker's Auto Repair, they're very honest, they're very dependable people, and certainly they look out for your best interest. They're not there to sell you everything that's ever been designed for your car. They're there to fix your symptoms and handle your maintenance. Nothing more, nothing less. That's an important consideration no matter what shop you go to. So Larry Harker's Auto, been in the Valley since 1967, and they're at 38th Avenue and Indian School. You can't hardly go wrong if you try them and you live in that area. Again, the phone number here if you have a car question is 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
This is it, the final week. We've been giving away an iPad 4 or iPad Mini of your choice just for listening.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for those of you outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, Kathleen has a cell phone that works from Los Angeles, which happens to be one of the greatest things I've ever heard. But Kathleen, the floor is yours. How can we help you?
Hello. Well, I'm from Los Angeles, but I'm actually in Phoenix at the time. But I'm a traveling nurse, and I am driving back and forth from L.A. to Arizona about every month and a half.
Okay.
And I have been getting my oil changed at every 7,000 miles because that's when they first told me to do it. But I'm from the old school where you get it changed every 3,000, and now that it's summertime, I'm wondering, should I really stick to the every 3,000 or do 7,000? Because also, when I'm here, I go to Sedona, I go to Tombstone, I go to Prescott. I'm just not sitting on my days off. I'm driving 2 hours to go do something.
Tell me about your car and how many miles it's got on it.
It is a Jeep 2007, and right now it has 180,302 on it.
Okay. All right. I want you to know in the old days it was 3,000 miles, but just like I'm going to use attempt to use an analogy, just like medicine and drugs have gotten better, so has oil. So there is no problem with going 7,000 miles. And I want to put this in perspective. Your horse in the barn doesn't come out once a day and go outside and pass gas and come back inside the barn. Your horse is being ridden hard once a month for 400 miles this way and 400 miles that way. So that is a good thing. So you're putting lots of miles on at a steady speed, at a steady temperature, and that's good. But our oil is really good. Now, I don't want you to use a conventional oil with a 7,000-mile oil change. I want you to use a semi-synthetic, and I just want it to be a name brand.
Okay.
All right, that's all. Valvoline, Quaker State, Castrol, whatever. It doesn't make any difference. But a semi-synthetic, go 7,000 miles. Now, if it's four up and four back, and then your Sedona and Tombstone trips, those trips are probably, what, 1,200-mile trips over back and messing around here in Arizona?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that would lead you, actually, if you do it once a month, you're going to be 7 months into it before you get that many miles on it.
Okay.
So I want to change my mind now that I've talked in a circle. I want you to change your oil. As long as your driving habits are going to continue, I want you to change your oil in May now.
Okay.
And I want you to do it in 6 months from now, which is November 1st. I want you to do it every 6 months. We'll probably tuck ourselves right in underneath that 7,000-mile interval. Because in 6 months, you're going to go 1,200 miles, so that 6 times 12 is, what, 7,200 miles. So we're going to be right there. So every 6 months, semi-synthetic, use a name brand, and I would do it because now in the summertime, you'll go through the summer with fresh oil, and you'll go through the winter with fresh oil, although chances are in your travels from L.A. to here, you're not hitting much winter.
Correct. I haven't hit any winter in any of my travels.
But when you come in November and you decide to go up to Sedona or to Toll Creek Canyon or Flagstaff, but you'll still be okay. And the beginning of the end of your car's engine life will be oil consumption. And when you start drinking oil, the end is near. But until then, you have nothing to worry about.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much for calling. Okay, we got anybody else there?
We got Lori.
Lori, good morning to you. It's Ladies Day. Lady, good morning, Lori. What can I do for you?
Good morning, Mark. I'm a 79-year-old retired lady living in Sun City West. I have a 2003 Toyota Camry, and I took it into a automotive place for a routine oil change in December for, to check everything, the hoses, and also to check my cooling system, my air conditioning and all of that in preparation for the summer.
Okay.
And they did everything, and then 3 months later, I didn't have any air conditioning. I went back and was, the first time I took it in December, it was for a total of $1,263. When I brought it back, the service writer said, "Oh, that's a different procedure or different thing to do as far as the AC is concerned." And on it, it said they connected the AC gauges, analyzed the pressure, pressure is low, performed visual inspection for leaks, no leaks found, recommended evacuate and recharge, and that was another $236. My question is, should they not have done this the first time around when I brought it in December?
Okay. That's a great question, and I have a good answer for you. But let me ask you this. Is it fixed now?
Yes.
And how much what did they do to fix it the second time?
Let's see. It says they put Freon in it and used AC oil dye mixture, and evacuated and recharged the AC system, added leak detection dye and performance test system.
And you got charged another $260 or something like that?
Yeah, $236. It was $186 to do that, and then they had a special AC air conditioning service for $24.95.
Okay. This is how I think it should have been handled. Keep in mind, I only know one side, your side.
Right.
I haven't heard from the shop, and I don't care about the shop. But here's the deal. When you took it in December, they evacuated it and recharged it. And when they evacuate it, they put a machine on to suck hard on your air conditioning system. If the vacuum is 28 inches of vacuum, and we shut the valves off, and we walk away for 30 minutes, when we come back, it better have 28 inches on it, or 10, or 12, or 15, or 18. Whatever we leave better be there when we get back.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the evacuation process. It's kind of a leak test. So they put the refrigerant in it. They sent you on your way. You had a leak. You had a leak because you didn't last from December till now.
Right.
So
2 minutes.
They just did the same thing they did the first time. And now they're saying, did they tell you that you have to come back every 5 days and let them put a new a light over your engine compartment to see if there's a leak?
Nope.
Oh, my God. Nope. You see, the reason why they put, you put dye in it because under a black light, the dye will be lime green or orange or purple or pink or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But you have to get the customer back in there to check it. So they can't just put the dye in at noon and at 1 o'clock check it and say, oh, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's not right. You say to the customer, come back in 5 days and then come back in another 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little upset that they charged you twice for the same thing and they didn't move you ahead any, or at least we don't think.
No.
It's possible that they left one of the valves leaking the first time and they fixed it the second time. It's possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little shady. I would have rather, if that was the case, I would have rather that they admitted it.
Yep.
You need to find another garage.
I'm afraid. So, do you have any recommendations for anybody out here in Sun City West?
Oh, yeah. There's Thunderbird Auto, northwest corner of Grand and Reams.
Oh, okay.
And he's a good guy. His name's Tom. He's a very, very honest guy. And that will never happen to you at his place. When we get back, I'm going to say goodbye to you, Lori. But when we get back, I'm going to talk about your case. Because that's not how we're supposed to handle it. He should have just put refrigerant back in it. He should have instructed you to come back every 5 days for the next 15 days. So that we could look and see if we could find the leak. He should have done more than what he did. But basically, he's got almost $500 of your money. And he hasn't done anything for you. So I'm a little upset about that. But when we come back, we'll talk about it again. But thank you, Lori. We'll be back right after this.
Demon automobile, the metal monster with the polyglass wheels, the end result of the dream of Henry Ford.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Tom and his clan at Action Auto, which is on Deer Valley and I-17 on the west northwest corner. Action Auto is a family-owned business. They pride themselves in accurate repairs, reasonable prices. They use factory-recommended intervals, which means they don't make up their own intervals like other people do. And they do the maintenance services that you only need. That's the only ones they'll perform. Their technicians are ASC certified, they're master certified, and they get the job done right. They have an A-plus rating at the Better Business Bureau, so Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley, and if you live in that area and you don't have a garage, or maybe you want to measure your garage against Tom and his group, then try Action Auto. We were talking to Lori. Lori had taken her car in and told him to check the air conditioning system. The proper way to check the air conditioning system is to go drive the car and put a thermostat in the center of the vent. If the temperature in the car, on a good warm day of 100 degrees or so, is below 55 degrees, then there's nothing else that needs to be done. Oftentimes that Camry is capable of 38, 42 degrees, but certainly if everything's okay, you're going to go drive it and the temperature is going to be between 45 and 55 degrees. That's what you do. Checking the pressures is pretty subjective because you have to know the ambient temperature, you have to know the moisture content or the humidity of the air, and you have to factor all that in, and nobody knows that. Nobody does that. So the next thing they do is they'll suck all your Freon out and fill you back up. But I suggest to you that that's not worth it. First of all, Lori had said that she spent $260 or something like that for an evacuate and recharge. The evacuate and recharge is about, depending on the shops, between $85 and $105, plus the refrigerant. And you can get refrigerant for your car for less than $50. I can't get to $260 if I do an evacuate and recharge, and I charge you for all the refrigerant I'm going to put in your car. Many of us have equipment that if you need 30 ounces and you have 20 in your car, we're going to pull the 20 out, clean it, put it right back, put 10 of ours in there, and bill you for the 10, not for all 30. Why do we evacuate and recharge? You see, Freon and oil in the system and water create acid. and that's bad for the inside of the system. So in science class, you may have forgotten that when you pull a vacuum on something that contains moisture, the water, we can't suck liquid water out of your air conditioning system. We have to turn it to a vapor or a gas, and then it comes out with no problem at all. So we hook up this very powerful sucking machine, and we just pull really hard on your system. Hopefully we're going to get somewhere around 18 to 25 inches of vacuum on it. And we're going to pull real hard, and then that's going to convert the water that's in a liquid form to a vapor form, and we're going to suck it out and put it into the atmosphere. We're also going to suck all the refrigerant out of your car. We're going to weigh it, and then we're going to clean it and put it right back in. But only if there's a reason for us to do that. Lori represented, her story was, is that she went in and they did that the first time in December, and then she just went back again because the air conditioning quit working, and they just did it again. Well, isn't that the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing twice and expecting a different result? Now, there's two possibilities. She probably has a leak. They didn't find it the first time, and they sure didn't find it the second time. I wouldn't give them a third. It also could be that the Schrader valves in your air conditioning system are just like this valve stems on your tires. Okay? That's exactly what they look like. If we don't make sure with a little bit of spit or some water or some Windex to spray in there just to make sure that they're not leaking, then we can cause them to leak when we hook our equipment up to your car. So if it comes back in and you check it real quick and you go, oh boy, I got refrigerant coming out of this fitting and I touched it last, I would hope that you just go ahead and fill it back up and say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, your car left with a leak. I found the leak, I fixed it, I filled your system back up, there's no charge. I would hope. That's what would happen. But that's the idea behind the science behind it. Years ago, we used to guess and look at your pressures, and I want to tell you something we now know, and it's been at least this decade, at least the first decade of this century, 2000 to 2010, we now know without question that your car needs exactly the amount of Freon. Anything higher or lower will not work well. It'll work okay, but not well. So that's why we have these sophisticated pieces of equipment that if it says 30 and a half ounces, we're going to put 30 and a half ounces in there. No ifs, ands, or buts. Just be careful. And Lori, go to Tom up at Thunderbird Auto, Grand and Reams Road, and he'll treat you nice. Tell him you talk to me and tell him what kind of a problem you have. He may want you to wait a while. Or you can go back to that other shop and say, hey, I want you to wave your light underneath my hood to see if that dye's working and it tells you where the leak is. But I would not have the other shop do the work, even if they found the leak. I wouldn't have them. Right now, the hair on the back of my neck standing up, and I'm thinking this is a bad deal. 602-508-0960. We'll be back.
Hi, I'm Mark Walters, host of Armed American Radio.
Most Friday nights, I can be found in the bed of my truck on an old chase lounge.
Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. I'm your host for the rest of this hour and next hour. If you have a car question, I'm here to help you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Okay, you know, parts prices used to be pretty standard in the 60s and 70s and 80s and even 90s. Yeah, the part, a starter or something like that, didn't vary much, maybe 10%. The other day I did a study on three parts. One of the parts had pricing of $1,035. $1,100 and $1,250. I'm thinking that's like 25% difference between the top and the bottom, because the bottom is $1,000, and the top is $1,250. I don't know if my math's right, but I think that's right. And that is the same part number by part number at three different vendors. Then I looked for a wiring harness, and there's two parts of this wiring harness. There's the front part, A and B. A was between $133 and $240, exactly the same part. If my math's right, that's like 100% difference. because 133 is 266 and the high end was 240, so we're pretty close. Now, the other part of that wiring harness was on the low side, 236 and 240. That's not bad. Those two prices are $4 and one, actually $3 if you count the cents, $3 difference. But then we have a 332. So 236, 240, and 332. And not one of the vendors had the lowest price across the board. Not one of them. Now the total quote, including, now here's a kicker, the labor varied between $418 and $1,600. So therefore, the bills were between $2,000, $3,000, and $3,300. The reason I bring this up to you is that I don't expect you to shop your parts. But there's nothing wrong with this. After you get your repair bill, the guys that don't want you to shop their parts won't give you the part number. The guys that aren't afraid of you shopping the parts, they'll put the part number on the repair order. So you know, call around, get whatever you want to do, and get some prices. Now, I had a nice lady come in the other day, and she said to me, would you reevaluate the cost on this compressor? And I said, I'd be happy to. What's on your mind? Tell me what started this. She says, well, you charged me $612. And I said, okay. And she says, but I can buy it here for $198. And I said, okay, well, let me look into it. Well, the $198 didn't come with a clutch. and that's an important part of the compressor, and mine did. And hers was in a no-name box, and mine was a Hitachi, so it's a name brand. So we talked, and we got within about, I don't know, $50, $60 at the end of the day. And I said to her, you can take advantage of me, or you can call me on a price once, but I'm not going to let you do it every time. Are you sure you want to use your only freebie for like $40 or $50? And she smiled, and she says, no. And I said, okay. But I said, let me make sure that we did right. So I went into parts, and I pulled all the receipts, and lo and behold, even the document that her work order was written on, our copy, had an addition error of $50. So we gave her back the $50, didn't charge her as a freebie, but we made a mistake. And when he added it in, he added the core in there. And there's not supposed to be a core charge, and the core charge was $50. So we figured it out, and that's okay. Just do when you approach the shop, just be nice. Just ask them to help you explain a particular situation. All righty. 602-508-0960. We've got time if you've got any questions or anything. The car repair business right now is kind of in flux because of the economy. Everybody knows that we have to make hay when the sun shines during the summertime. So right after April 15th, usually the 1st of May, we're running and gunning, and we're going to go hard until the first day of school. Now, it used to be around the end of October, or the end of August, but now it's the 1st of August, and when everybody goes back to school, business kind of dries up for a while because people aren't taking vacations and everybody's focused on school. So our you know, harvest system, and I don't want to use
Bob.
Harvest. I don't want to use harvest. Our really busy system time is between May and the end of July. May, June, July. 3 months. And then it falls off a little bit. So you can understand how some guys came into the summer with their credit lines not paid off, knowing full well that if they don't pay them off by the time business slows down in August, they're in big trouble. That happens every year. So you need to be careful and just deal with somebody who I will never send you to anybody that doesn't have 5 years underneath their belt. And most of these guys have 20 years under their belt. It's important to know that seasoned shops are going to be around for a while. But I also want to tell you that in my geographical area, we've had a shop go in and out of business, I think, 4 times in the last 2 years, close by me. Different names, all that kind of stuff. And they left a lot of people hanging. So, Bob, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Mark, what do you tell a customer, say, if they come in with their own shocks and brake pads and they just ask you to install them?
This is how the conversation sounds. It sounds like when we work on a car, then statistically, the bill is going to be half parts and half labor. That's a good rule of thumb. So if the repair bill is $400, then it's going to be $200 of parts and $200 of labor. Now, of that $200 worth of parts, I'm hoping I'm going to make $60 or $70. So if I work on your car, what's happening is that I'm losing that $50 or $60 or $70 on the profit on the shocks by installing yours. So I have lots of cars waiting to be worked on today, and I'm not going to make as much money on yours as I am the rest of them. So what we do, and we copied this from some other shops, you can bring your own parts once, but not every time. So with computers, we can keep track of that kind of stuff. So don't waste it on a set of windshield wipers. Waste it on a transmission. Waste it on a set of air shocks that cost $1,400. Waste it on something that's good. There's that old adage that you can say, you know, take your eggs to the restaurant and have them cook them for you. That's been around since my dad was here in the 50s. But the fact of the matter is it is an uncomfortable situation. And here's the real rub. You had a clunk, and you said put the shocks on, but you didn't tell me you had a clunk. So I put the shocks on, and a day later you come back and say, you didn't fix it. And I said, didn't fix what? And you said, I have a clunk, I still have the clunk. Now, I am obligated to find your clunk before I can say that my installation on the shock absorbers was okay. So I have to go double check all my shocks, and I have to find that the sway bar bushing that's causing the clunk has nothing to do with my shock absorbers. So therefore, I lost money on your car the first time, and then I had to diagnose it the second time to save my own butt. I had to diagnose it the second time for free to prove to you that your diagnosis was wrong and you never needed the shocks, and that bushing's $10 and $20 labor. So if the part fails, then we have this big war about, did it fail because of the way it was made, or did it fail because of the way it was installed? And it gets ugly from there. So that's the reason why I limit my customers to just once. Just once. And you know, it really doesn't become a big issue. It's usually first-time customers that want me to do that. But after we talk about it, I hope they understand. I just want to avoid that kind of conflict. Has that happened to you, Bob?
No, I mean, I have a shop I go to, and they don't seem to mind. I mean, I bring shocks in, I bring my own oil and filters, and they just charge me their hourly rate, and I don't know.
No, that's okay. That's a good shop. That's a good shop. He may not be real busy. He may just want the work no matter how it looks. He may like you, or you may want Hocus Pocus oil, and he doesn't have access to Hocus Pocus oil, so you bring your own. He lets you bring your own. You may want a filter that has 20 micron capability, and he doesn't want to track it down. There's lots of reasons why he would look the other way. Maybe you and your wife have been customers of his for many years. Maybe business is kind of slow. Or maybe you have just been that kind of a customer that you've been forgiving at times, and he values you. Because see, when we have a conflict with a customer, I think most shop owners are going to just ask the question first, do I want to keep you or not? It's not really who's right or who's wrong. If you're mad at me over $50 and I want to keep you, I don't care about the $50. I'm going to give you the $50. But if you've been a jerk the whole time and every time you come in, my staff runs and nothing we've ever done for you in 17 years is going to make you happy, I'm not giving you that $50 back whether you deserve it or not. I'm not doing it. It's time to say goodbye. I had to fire a customer not too long ago who kept walking into the shop without coming through the front lobby. And they walk back there and start talking to the technician. Well, that costs me money. And after three or four warnings, I just wrote him a letter and said, you know what, I don't want you to come around anymore. I don't know why you think that's okay, but it's not okay. But there's lots of reasons. I'm not saying that I set industry standards. I just give you examples of how we do it, and probably about a third of the rest of the guys do it, because we all learn from one another. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We've got another hour to go, so after this we'll take your calls. If you'd like to, you can get on board. There's lots of questions that we've had just recently. We had somebody talk about the different colors of coolant: pink, orange, green, red and blue. Isn't that a wonderful thing, man? And what did all that mean? I mean, is there a particular color your car's going to like more than the others? But in reality, it has everything to do with the interval and the make and model of your car. Orange might be Ford. Blue might be Chrysler. Blue might be Honda. Orange could be Dexcool, could be a red, could be for General Motors. So there's lots of different things that happen on your car, and they're getting, sometimes they bring it all together, and sometimes they don't. Right now, transmission fluid is something that we used to use, two different kinds of transmission fluid for every car in the whole wide world. And today we can't do that anymore. You literally could have 20 different kinds of fluid available for all the customers that you have to service. 20 different, and some of it gets pretty expensive. Some of it is $7 and $8 and $9 a quart. So after we put 10 quarts in your car at $10 a quart, you can see it's going to be expensive. So those are the kinds of issues. Spark plugs is another one. Spark plugs is one that there's about 4 or 5 different levels of quality. And what do you want in your car? You probably don't want one. You probably want 2 or 3. And unless you have a Corvette or something you really love, then you probably don't want the double platinum electrodes that will fire for the rest of all of our lives and never need to be replaced. Besides that, if you're a tinkerer, you don't want to put a spark plug that's going to last forever, because what are you going to do on Saturdays? You got to pull the spark plugs out, look at them, show them to your wife, put them on the wire wheel, put them back in. That's all you got to do. That's what I do on my lawnmowers and stuff. So, 602-508-0960. And I want to remind you real quick that there is a couple things I want you to remember. When you go in, tell them about your symptoms. Don't tell them how to fix your car. Tell them about your symptoms. When they call you and tell you what's wrong with it, you say to them, is this a fix or a guess? And if it's a guess, then how are we going to unwind the deal if it doesn't fix it? Number 3, what's the final cost? How much am I going to write my check for? Number 4, please put my old parts back in my car. I don't want my gas filters or my oil filters, but everything else I want back in boxes and put them in my car. And then, of course, you pay with a credit card. Those 5 steps guarantee that you're going to be treated fairly. Guarantee. So just remember, don't tell them how to fix your car. Give them the symptoms. Pay with a credit card. Get your old parts back. Because if they put a $400 part on it and it doesn't work, you're going to be glad you have your old one back. So, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in another 4 or 5 minutes, and we're going to take another hour, and we'll talk about your car.
I will.
With the real car guy, master technician, Mark.
Any callers?
Where the only two things
we can caller, Tom.
Is okay. A broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and for the next 56 minutes, I'm here at your service to help you with your car questions and car problems. I don't have an agenda. I'm looking out what's best for you. I think one of the faults that it's commonly brought to my attention is that sometimes people, they'll say to me in jest, tell me how you really feel. And you know what? It's just, I got that gene someplace, probably from my mother. Speaking of mothers, and speaking of Mother's Day around the corner, the biggest heartache I have in my whole life is my mom passed away in 2005. I miss her every day of my life, and I wish I would have called her more. I wish I would have sent her flowers more. I find myself feeling guilty on her birthday, taking flowers to her grave, because I didn't hit her birthdays all the time with when she was alive. So those of you that still have mothers that are this side of heaven, I promise you. I promise you, if you haven't given your mom a call, taken her to lunch, or anything like that, chances are you'll regret it after your mom passes away. But if your mom's still around, and it's a good thing if she is around, then it's also a nice thing to do is to treat her to something. And as I was telling you the first hour, there's a place in Tempe that my wife and my daughter have been going to, which is a massage therapist place. It's a massage sanctuary. So it's on the Warner and 101. And this lady, Elizabeth Kazan, she owns At Ease Massage Sanctuary. And Ease is E apostrophe S for Elizabeth. At Elizabeth's Massage Sanctuary, except she just uses the E apostrophe S. And my daughter, Andy, is also a massage therapist. And so when she went to Elizabeth, she says, "Dad, she's really good." And I said, "That's a wonderful compliment, because you are in the same trade she is. And so when you leave there, I would expect you're going to have one of two opinions. Oh, she's not that good, or she's really good." And I said, "So I think that's a big compliment. So if you want to send your wife or your mother someplace to have a massage, you live over in the East Valley, or wherever you want, then email me at mark@marksalem.com, and I'll give you all the information. mark@marksalem.com. It doesn't get any easier than that with an email address, mark@marksalem.com. Or you can just go to my website, marksalem.com, and there's plenty of links there where you can send me an email, and I'll happily guide you. And I want you to know, I don't make a dime off of this kind of stuff. When these good things happen to people around me and they tell me about it, I feel like it's something I should pass on to you just because that's the right thing to do. All righty, we're going to go to Tom. Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you today?
Good morning, Mark. First time caller, so a little nervous.
Oh, don't worry about it.
I have a 2002 Ford Expedition.
Okay.
And it's got those darn adjustable pedals. And they were working great. One morning, I raised them up to vacuum underneath and clean out the mats, and then when I tried to lower them, they wouldn't work. Now, I'm 6 foot tall. I wish I was 5 foot four when I come to a spot. They're stuck at the very top, and that is a problem. Is there any way that I could fix that on my own, or is that something I have to take into an electrical technician or something?
No, you need to get up underneath there and actually see how they're actually operating the pedals. Mm-hmm. There's a good chance that the pedals are on a pivot, and the pivot has an arm to some kind of an electric motor. And as you push the button, you know, in and out, it brings the pedals, it pushes the piston on the electric motor, pushes the pedals down or upward. Now, here's the question. The question is the switch bad? Is power to the switch bad? Is ground to the switch bad? Is the motor bad, or did the arm fall off? And I got to tell you something, I don't see that this is going to be a big repair. Especially if you went in and said, "My pedals are stuck at 5 foot four and I'm 6 foot. I want you first to see if you can just get the pedals to the downward position. And if you can do that, that'll make me happy." Because sometimes we'll just get up underneath there and there's probably an adjustment on that rod, and we'll just adjust the rod and push the pedals all the way down to the back, lock the lock nut on it, and give it back to you. Because you don't want to fix it, that's okay. We won't even track down the electrical problem or check the motor or anything. We'll just adjust them down. Sometimes you can just take the motor off and just wind it the other way, because it's probably a screw motor. And there's just lots of ways that we can do that. You need a shop that's got a MacGyver working there. But
I didn't know that. I'm experienced with mechanical work when I was in high school back in the 80s. And they had told us, you know, you're experienced in carburetors, there's, you know, fuel injection stuff that's coming in. And all these electronics coming in, they had no adjustable pedals back in the 80s.
Yeah.
None of that stuff. And so this stuff's foreign to me.
Yep.
Well, okay, now, yeah, I can get down there and actually see for myself.
That's all you got to do. Now, you can't leave the pedals swinging for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. So you can't, if there is an arm and a motor, then you can't pop the arm off and just leave it off, because that's going to be dangerous. But mm-hmm. if you pop the arm off and you see that you can push them back and put a pin in there, and say, "Oh, well, that'll hold it," then you're home free. But really and truly, what part of town do you live in?
I'm in the West Valley over in Glendale.
Okay. There's a couple good places up there. Ian Hugh, Tire and Auto, he could do that. S&S Tire could do that. D&B Auto could do that. But if you're kind of mechanically inclined, you get a flashlight, get your wife's makeup mirror, crawl underneath there and take a look. I'm quite sure you're going to be able to see the mechanism that swings the pedals.
Great.
And check your fuses too, okay? Make sure that you check your fuses with a 12-volt test light to make sure that both sides of the you have to have the key on the engine running, and you touch both sides of the fuse with the 12-volt test light to make sure it's got power on one side and power on the other. Mm-hmm. And you want to do that, and then you want to play with the switch a little bit. It's probably a rocker switch, right? That goes up or down or left or right. Okay, you're going to want to kind of manhandle it. So if you push on it and nothing happens, I want you to push on it a little harder, a little harder, a little harder, and all of a sudden it starts working. You go, oh, the switch is bad. So do those kinds of simple things, and you got a 50-50 chance of fixing it.
Okay.
All right?
Great. Thank you, Mark.
All right, you're more than welcome, Tom. You're more than welcome. If anybody else have a call, if you want to call.
Caller George.
602-508-0960. 508-0960. George, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have an 83 Chevy half ton, and it's been sitting for 10 years. And I wanted to get it running again, but before I parked it, it had an intermittent problem of sometimes it would start and sometimes it wouldn't. I would try to start it one morning, it wouldn't start. I'd go out the next morning and start right up. It cranks over fine.
Okay.
I know that there's plenty of fuel going into the carburetor. I can hear a squirt in the carburetor, so I'm pretty sure it's an ignition problem.
A piece of cake.
Pardon me?
Piece of cake.
Piece of cake?
Yeah. And you have an electronic ignition.
Right.
And so you have a pickup assembly, which is a coil that surrounds the shaft of the distributor.
Right.
And the pickup assembly has two wires, a green one and a white one, and they go to one end of the ignition module. And from there, and the reason why that has a wire connection there is because the pickup assembly, the pole assembly, will pivot left and right with the vacuum advance. So we need to have that wire interchange there, but it also creates a problem with the wires. So you take the distributor cap off, and you look underneath it, and you're going to see the pickup assembly, and you're going to see the module. You take your finger and grab a hold of that green wire, and you tug on both ends of it, and you grab a hold of the white wire, and you grab on and tug on both ends of it. If it comes off of the pickup assembly, you just found your problem. Now, the module, the ignition module, either have two pins, it'll either have five pins, it can have four pins, five pins, or seven pins. We have testers that we've had, and I think they're pretty dusty about this time of my life.
I imagine they are.
But a lot of us have testers that we can test your module, and most good auto parts store has the same tester. Then you have a coil sitting on top of the cap, and you have a rotor. And one of those four things is going to be bad, and typically you can see the problem. You can see that the coil's burnt up. You can see that there's a hole in the center of the rotor where the spark, instead of going to the tang in the center of the rotor and being distributed to the spark plug wire, it goes straight to the tang, and it jumps right through the plastic part of the rotor to the shaft of the distributor, so therefore you have no spark. So if you wanted to make a good $8 guess, put a new rotor in it. But once you get it running, it's going to be easy to figure that out, but you've done a great job because you already know it's ignition. You already know it's electrical because you got gas. So get it running. Change the oil, air up the tires, check everything. Don't fix anything for the first 30 days you're driving it because half the stuff will go away. But if you have the problem where it cranks but doesn't catch and you have fuel, then really and truly, the checkout on your distributor would be $75 at the most. That's all it would be. This is old stuff to us. We'd actually have to go back in the parts room and probably dust off a couple of meters. So it's not that big of a deal. And then, or you know something else you could do if you really wanted to? If it sparked, just go buy a rebuilt distributor. With the rebuilt distributor, you're going to get a new pole piece, pickup assembly. You're going to get a new ignition module. Go ahead and buy that $8 rotor, and then buy the $25 coil, and you're done.
Okay, before I parked it, I did put a rebuilt distributor in it.
Okay.
And the problem was still there.
What did you transfer? Because the distributor only comes with the pole piece and the pickup, so that means you use the rotor and the coil from the old one.
Yes.
Then you better replace those two, huh? That's all it can be. Okay. There's nothing else.
Could it be a loose connection on the computer?
Well, no, because the signal is within. It's unlike new fuel injected vehicles here, where the signal goes from the crankshaft sensor to the PC, and then the PC ignites fuel and spark and fuel
One
delivery.
Minute.
Okay,
it's different. Your entire electrical system is that distributor. You have one 12-volt lead that comes into the side. You got a tack line that comes off the side if you have a tack in it. But that's it. That entire I can hook 12 volts to that distributor and ground, and I can spin it and have you wet your finger and touch this, and I'm going to make you wet your pants.
Okay, it has three leads going into the distributor.
Okay.
I don't remember the colors.
I'll tell you what they are, but I got to take a break, so I'm not going to be able to do it. You stay here, okay? Anybody else, 602-508-0960. But what you have is you have a pigtail with three leads that plug in from the bottom. Then you have two separate leads on the front. So there's three in the back and two in the front. You probably have five. You may not have the tachometer lead, so that means you'd have four. But I'll explain all of those leads to you. 602-508-0960. When we get back, we're going to finish talking with George, and maybe you, if you'd like to join us. We'll be back right after this.
The Obama Administration.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. It's 21 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and we're talking with George and Misty. You're going to be next here, but got to take a look care of a little business. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my buddy, Bob, at Quality Transmission. There's hardly a week that goes by that I don't get a call from a happy customer. I like those kinds of calls. That's kind of like when the teacher calls you and says that your child was great today, as opposed to the last week where your child had horns and was causing all kinds of problems. But at Quality Transmission, they always say the same thing. They say Bob's very knowledgeable. He's very kind. He's clearly interested in putting us back on the road as cheaply as possible. But he also has the skills and talents to discuss the risk. I like that. So if you're looking for a good transmission shop, Quality Transmission in Tempe, they're on McClintock between University and the 202. George, on the back side, in that little square box on your distributor, there's three wires in the back that all come together. The middle one is a ground, and there should be a tang on the cap there for the ground. But if you turn the cap upside down and there's no tang, there's a ground strap that the coil sits on, and that ground strap is an important part of that distributor. It's 40 cents, and what people do is they swap out parts, but they leave the ground strap in the old cap, and they don't transfer it to the new cap. So on the back side of this square box, you should have tang, tang, tang. And the two outer ones are the pickup, and the one inner one's a ground. Now the two on the front side, you'll see on the distributor, it'll say positive. The one on the left is going to be a red lead, and that's going to be power into the distributor. And the one on the right, it's going to say tack, T-A-C-K, or T-A-C-H. And that one's going to go to a tachometer. Now you may not have that one, which means you only have four wires.
Okay.
All righty. And now you can take and unplug that back one and take an oscilloscope that shows the wave pattern on a television screen, and you can touch your tang, your two leads, to the outside two wires, and then crank the motor over, and you should see a wavy line be created on your oscilloscope.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells you the pickup assembly's working. There's lots of things you can do, but like I said, for the $75, I'm guessing that most of us would cost you to test it. It might be something. And you know what? You can take the distributor in all by itself.
Uh-huh.
Because we can test it all by itself.
Okay.
So we don't need the rest of the car.
Yeah, here's my dilemma. I live up in Grand King.
Okay.
And I'm hoping to drive it down there. I was wondering if there's any way to bypass any of that.
Not really.
No?
Not really. But really and truly, for the cost of a distributor rotor and a coil, you already did the other two parts, so just replace the rotor and the coil, and then once you get it running, you should be fine.
Okay.
Well, all right?
Yeah, I'm going off the hill this week anyway, so I'll pick it up.
All right. All right, well, good luck to you, buddy.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
You betcha. And Misty, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I've been thinking about calling you for a couple of months, and I heard that caller call about an older Expedition, and it finally motivated me to give you a call.
Okay.
I've got a 2000 Ford Expedition, and the lock, the key code alarm that you use to lock and unlock the cars.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes the doors will unlock, and sometimes they won't. And it's especially the driver's side door, of course, the door that I need. And so I wind up having to use the key, which defeats the purpose. And also, the seat is supposed to move automatically when you, you know, hit the key code. And sometimes it kind of coughs a little bit and then decides to move. In fact, I'm out here fiddling with it now, and between the time I called and just now, the seat decided to move forward. So I'm wondering, is this all related?
It's something, Misty, that you wouldn't want to assume that. If you were standing in front of a good shop, the shop person would say, Misty, pick one you want us to focus on. And here's the deal. If we go in and we find out what's wrong with the door locks, there is a chance that we're going to fix the seat at the same time. And if that's the case, then, you know, you hit a home run. You got two for the price of one. But to go in and jump back and forth is not a good, a wise decision with respect to spending your money.
Okay.
And the door lock, first of all, we want to make sure you put a battery in your remote. Make sure that that's good. It's important for you to understand that the antennas are in the front doors of your Expedition. So you have to be kind of within sight of the Expedition. And I want you to start, you know, way back away from it, push the button, take 10 steps, push the button, and let's just make sure that we have a range that we can live with. And if you push it once, it should, I'm guessing here now, when you push it once, it should just unlock the driver's door. And if you push it again, it should unlock all the doors. Is that what you found before?
Yep, that's right. Okay. And the all the doors part work, but even when the all the doors part open, the driver's side still doesn't.
Okay. Now, we're going to use the master switch to control that. And the master switch is the switch at the driver's position, and it's the one that gets the most use, bar none.
Yep.
There's also a door lock solenoid inside the door. And I just want you to picture this tube of toilet paper, the cardboard tube, with two wires in the bottom and a big arm at the top. And when you energize it, the arm goes up. And then when you energize it again, the arm goes down. And that's what locks and unlocks the door. So you could, if you push the button and the driver's door doesn't open, I want you to walk up and keep pushing the button. Just push it and hold it. And I want you to walk up and take your fist and beat the outside of the door underneath the handle and downward. Not enough to dent the door, Misty, just to jar the door.
On the outside of the door or the inside?
Outside.
The outside of the door?
Yep. So you're going to start right at the door handle, and you're going to go like this. All the way down the door. And when you do that, I want you to listen and watch the door latch. If you're hitting it and all of a sudden the door unlocks, then that starter or that door lock assembly is probably defective. It's the one that gets the most used anyway. So if you can jar it and make it work, then that means the door lock activator in the driver's door is probably your problem. So that takes care of that one. On the other one, the remote fob, when you push the button,
2 minutes.
You're asking it to remember who you were.
Right.
Like with any other computer, Misty, I want you to disconnect the negative side of the battery first and then the positive. I want you to take the two cables in your hands and I want you to touch the two cables together after they've been completely disconnected from the battery.
Okay.
You touch the two cables together, and that discharges all the capacitors. And what we're doing is we're doing a reboot of your truck. And
okay.
Then put so negative off first and negative on last. Okay? Then you start it up and see if a reboot, and I would say 25-30% of the time, just that will fix your dilemma where it doesn't recognize which key you're using.
Okay.
After that, it gets
kind
of expensive, Misty. So you would take it in and say, check it out, but I want you to quit before you spend too much money. I'll live with the key problem or something like that.
If I do find out that it's the assembly inside the driver's side door, do you have any idea about how much that would cost me if I just want to get that part fixed?
Most everybody's going to charge you to take about $100 to take the door panel off and put the door panel on, and the door lock activator can be anywhere as little as $30 all the way up to $80. And so you've got the part and the labor plus sales tax, shop supplies, and environmental charges. So I would think that you're going to be between $140 and $200.
Okay.
All righty.
That's reasonable. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, Misty. You're welcome. And we've got open line 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and one more time, 508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're here till noon, so we're talking about cars. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They've been a family-owned and operated business in Mesa since 1970. They're equipped to handle just about anything you need, major, minor, foreign, domestic, big, small. I think he'll even do a lawnmower every once in a while. Brian's a great guy, but they understand that your vehicle is a major investment, and they're going to care for your vehicle as if it was their own. Brian and Thelma own Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. So Main and Stapley, east on the south side of the road, and you just can't do better than those fine kids. All righty, we're going to go back to the phone. Oh, do we have a phone?
We do. We got Don.
Don, good morning to you, buddy. How can I help you?
Hey, yeah, I am here.
Okay.
I've got a 2006 Kia Spectra.
Okay.
And I bought it used. Drove fine, probably 20,000 miles, loud howling. Diagnosed myself as it being wheel bearings.
Okay.
And myself and a friend replaced the wheel bearings.
Okay.
Problem went away. Mm-hmm. Not probably a week of driving, and the howling came back. So, self-diagnosis again. I probably didn't do it quite as good as a shop could have done it. So, I took it to one of Mark Salem recommended shops. Was okay. Very pleased. They got it done for me in a speedy way, and now the howling is back. So, I'm trying to figure out how to diagnose what would be causing these wheel bearings to go bad.
Well, I don't think the wheel bearings are going bad.
Really?
And what's the odds of that? The odds are far better that somebody's misdiagnosing it.
I would agree, but when we put new wheel bearings in, the sound goes away. Temporarily.
Those are great questions, but I gotta say, who cares? I have to say, who cares? Those are great questions.
Gotcha. But
that's not going to move us to where we want to be.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you a question. When you drive the car straight down the road, is the noise there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. What happens if you make a sweeping left turn at 40 miles an hour? Does the noise change?
No.
If you make a sweeping right turn at 50 miles an hour, does the noise change? It's not a wheel bearing.
And we drove it, and we all agreed with that. I mean, that's typical. I am, a tinker on cars, don't know a lot, and that I would have thought the same thing. That usually, when you put pressure on one side or the other, that one's going to howl more or not less.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
and something else you can do too is a lot of shops have these
CV
transmitters.
CV joints or half shafts, something there maybe.
Well, is it front or rear?
Front.
Okay, how do you know?
Ear, and I can feel it in my feet.
Good. Have you ridden in the passenger seat?
Yes.
So you've ridden both driver and passenger. Is it different from one side to the other?
Yes.
And which side is worse?
Driver's side, you feel it more in your feet than the driver's side.
Okay. Have you swapped the tires left to right?
I did not do that. That was one more thing. Just prior to all this starting, brand new tires on the car.
Okay. Those are the things that you do to help diagnose it. You know, you drop the pressure on both front tires 10 pounds and go drive it. And say, we're looking for change here. That's all. Just change.
Right.
Then
you
go back up to 10 and then go 10 more on the top side and then go drive it. Then maybe take the fronts and put them on the back on the front. This is the process of going. And then, like I said, you drive both sides and somebody else drives both sides, and you both have to agree that it's on the left front and it's the front.
Right.
Now, the only thing that's moving, and now the noise, is it related to the speed of the engine or the speed of the vehicle?
feet of the vehicles, sitting at idle or, you know, at certain speeds, it definitely has its own frequency. So
okay.
At 30, it may not be quite as predominant as 60.
Okay, but the real test is get going to the sweet spot, 40 miles an hour, and the noise is there.
1 minute.
Right.
Shift it into neutral and turn the key off.
yeah.
And then start swerving drastically left and right. Because okay. Now it's not engine related. So
sure.
If that's the case, then... But, I don't know where you got the wheel bearings. I don't know if anybody inspected the shaft. I don't know if the hub assembly is correct or if it's pressed all the way on or all the way off. But
right.
We have these transmitters that we can put underneath the car, and then the passenger guy's looking at a screen and he sees what the vibrations are. And so, I mean, you can... But a half shaft doesn't have the symptoms you describe.
Right.
It doesn't have it. However, who knows? Once someone fixes it, everybody will have the answers to the questions. But let me give you some good advice, because I got to take a break. You need to go back to them and just say to them, can we start over? Can we look again? Let's work together. That's what you really need to say to them. Unless you told them what to fix, if you told them to do the wheel bearing and you didn't challenge them with the diagnosis, then that's your fault. Remember, I always say, give them the symptoms.
But we did ride around together.
Okay, all right. Then go back to them and start anew and just say, let me demonstrate it. It's back, which has happened before. Let's see what we can do from here. And then let me know how it turns out, okay?
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. I'm your host here on The Patriot, KKNT 960 AM. Every Saturday from 10 to noon, we're here talking about your car and helping you out. I got a couple quick comments real quick, and then we're going to get back to the phone calls. Misty, if you're still listening, you had your Expedition and you had a door lock problem. I want you to concentrate on walking up to the driver's door and then pushing your remote and listening to what happens inside the door. So if you push it and you hear a clunk, but the door doesn't unlock, that will help you diagnose it. And that'll be very beneficial for the shop that you choose to diagnose it. And then if you push it a couple times, nothing happens. Maybe the other three doors open, but the driver's has not. That's when I want you to kind of use your fist and beat on the outside of the door while you're pushing the button. So push the button and hold it, hit, 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 hit. Let go of the button, push the button and hold it, hit, 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 hit. And if the door then opens, that is beautiful. You've just saved yourself $100 worth of diagnostic. Another thing you want to do is when you get out, slam the door gently and then check and see if the door will unlock. And then you get out the next five times, I want you to slam it hard and see if the door unlocks differently then. That'll help you out. On the wheel bearing issue, Don, it's well, we advertise it all the time that I have $5,000 of my money protecting you. I've never paid a dime in 20 years, and we've never even been to the arbitration part of the Better Business Bureau because the shops take care of those issues themselves. I'm proud to tell you that I've never had to swat any of them or been mad at any of them because they just do good work. So I feel really confident if you're using one of my shops for that wheel bearing noise that they'll work it out to your satisfaction. And if not, we have a complaint procedure that involves you and me, and I'll explain that to you if you'll email me. All righty, let's go real quick. Kurt's Auto Repair is up on Bell and I-17. He's just east of I-17 on the north side of the street. Kurt has years of experience. He's been on our list for many, many years, and his goal is to offer good service, affordable prices, and to get you on the road quickly. One of the things that Kurt has is I find no fault with any of his staff. He's got a bunch of gentlemen there that are so kind, so polite, so perfect. Sometimes I wonder how Kurt got him to work for him. Nevertheless, he's a good guy. Kurt's Auto, I-17 and Bell. If you're up in that area, give him a try. Okay, Mike, you're up next. Mike, how can I help you?
Yeah, I was wondering how many miles you can reasonably expect the fuel injectors to perform well. I have a 95 Ford F-150 four-wheel drive, and the mileage is real bad, and I'm just wondering about fuel injectors.
Okay.
It's got 209,000 miles.
Okay. It's not going to be the fuel injectors, because if the fuel injectors were closed, you'd have a check engine light. And if the fuel injector was leaking fuel big time, you'd have a check engine light.
Uh-huh.
So you don't have a check engine light because you would have said that.
Right.
And so it's not the fuel injectors. It's more likely an oxygen sensor. If the oxygen sensor looks in the exhaust and it wants to see oxygen. Now, if there is no oxygen, that means the reason there is no oxygen is because everything that's coming out of the motor is gasoline. Because you only have two choices, oxygen and gas.
Yeah.
So what happens is the oxygen sensor lies to the computer and says, all I see is oxygen, I don't see any fuel. Give me more fuel, give me more fuel. So that in the controller, the computer, instead of the injector sounding like this, the injector will sound like this. Well, it turns the injector onto a lawn sprinkler, and at the computer at that point, when it starts to flood the motor with gasoline, it says to the oxygen sensor, hey, are you seeing that? Are you seeing that? Are you seeing that? And the oxygen sensor says, no. So then the computer's going to turn on the check engine light and say, hey, you guys need to check that oxygen sensor because either he's disconnected or he's dirty or he's bad because I flooded that motor with gas and he didn't say, holy mackerel, I see gasoline. So your 220, to answer your question bluntly, the injectors are going to be fine until there's a problem. And it's usually an idle problem. It's an uneven idle, a rough idle nobody can fix by with a vacuum leak or cleaning the throttle blades or anything like that. And you'll almost always get a check engine light because the injector will run rich because they stick open more than they stick closed. But to answer your question, you can try some fuel injection cleaner in the gas tank just to see if it makes any difference because we're just looking for change. So for $8, put some in it. You can put two bottles in it for all I care. You put two bottles in it, you try it. If nothing happens, then you can pretty much be sure that it's not the fuel injectors. And really and truly, the Fords, you won't believe this, but the Fords are cheaper than anybody else in the world. God only knows why. But sometimes we buy Ford injectors for $39 a piece. Now, that's not always, but some of the other import cars and some of the other American cars can be up to $200 a piece, and diesel ones can be $400 or $500 each for 8 injectors on a diesel. So I think in your particular case, I'd have somebody just take a look at the oxygen sensors, and they're going to test them to see if they can see fuel and gas, and probably one of them will flunk. Then you probably have three.
No, just one.
Okay.
What
year was your car?
A 95.
Okay. It may have a pre and post cat, or it may have one on each side, but I could be wrong.
It's got one in front of the. Of course, somebody put the cat back exhaust system on it. Maybe they didn't put the.
Well, yeah,
I don't see any wire back there, though.
Okay,
but I did change the oxygen.
Okay,
sensor, right?
The other thing would be the fuel pressure regulator. Then the fuel pressure.
I checked that; it seems to be good. But I just thought that might be a reason that the fuel mileage has dropped about 4 miles to the gallon.
Okay.
It's down to 9.
All right, But, Mike, let me just share with you. Every time we change seasons, and, of course, in Arizona, you know that we only have two seasons. It goes from cold to hot, and then it goes from hot to cold.
Yeah.
We always see gasoline fuel economy issues, especially when we're changing the seasons. And we just hit 100 degrees the other day for the first time, so I expect we're going to have these. But you can't test the oxygen sensor yourself. Okay?
Yeah.
You can't. And it doesn't take special equipment. It takes special knowledge. And you also have to read the oxygen sensor, and chances are you don't have a scanner that will read it. The other thing, too, is the fuel pressure regulator and some of those other things. One of the things you'd want to do is just check the tailpipe. We'd want to just plug our emissions equipment into your tailpipe and just go drive the thing and see what's coming out of the tailpipe. If there's a whole bunch of gas coming out of the tailpipe, then we got a problem underneath the hood. But if there is no gas coming out of the tailpipe, then it's either Mike's foot's right foot is too heavy, or we've just got a seasonal change that Mike's jumped on to a little too early and wait till it gets really hot and his fuel economy will come back.
Yeah.
All righty.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. Thanks. You betcha. John, you're up next. John, how can I help you?
Thanks, Mark. This is probably going to be a simple question. I got a 1974 Jeep J10 that I'm bringing out of retirement. I bought it new, and it's been hasn't been running for the last 4 years. And I took the tank off and had it all cleaned out and had replaced the sending. Original sending unit only had one little insulated post that came off of it, which I assume, and it comes, it's a positive ground.
Okay.
And but the new one that I had to buy, because I can't find an old one, the new one I had to buy had the insulated one that my assumption is it's the positive, just like the old one. But it's also got another one, which I assume is negative. Now, what I don't want to do is hook everything up, and if hook something up wrong, I'm pretty good with a wrench, but electricity on
it's easy.
Drives me up a wall.
Easy.
I don't want to put everything up together again and then have screwed something up and have to pull that damn tank.
Okay. So, all right. All you do is crawl underneath there with the sending unit. You've already pulled the tank out.
Right, thank you. Well, I put it back in again. It's all clean. But I mean, I've just kind of temporary up there with the jack.
Okay, all right. All I would do is it takes two people. And so, John, you're going to be up front. And so I'm going to crawl underneath there, and I'm going to plug that one wire into the insulated terminal, and I'm going to have you turn the key on.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm going to say, where's the gas gauge? And you're going to say, whatever. And then I'm going to pull the terminal off, and it should go to one extreme or the other. So it's either going to go full empty or full rich, full. Okay, so, and then I'm going to take that wire and I'm just going to touch it to metal, just the wire, just touch it, and I'm going to expect John to say, oh, the needle jumped. Perfect. Now I'm going to plug it back into the sending unit and I'm going to raise the bar from bottom to middle, and I say, where's that, John? Middle, top, all the way up and down. Now I'm holding the sender in my hand. It is not grounded. All I've got is that one resistance wire on there. I'm betting that the sender will not make the gauge work with the key on. I'm betting it won't until you put a ground.
Gotcha.
Now, if you want to make sure that you don't wipe out your sender, on the lead for the ground, I want you to have an alligator clip on a piece of, 4 foot wire, okay. An alligator clip on each end, but I want you to put a 1 or 2 amp fuse in the middle of it.
Oh, okay.
That way, if we run into an electrical short, then we're going to pop the fuse and we're going to protect your sender. Now, if you check it and you lift the arm up and down on the piano keys and nothing happens, the key's on, then you hook the ground up and they work, there's your answer.
All right, because I knew the old one, as I say, the old one did not have a ground, and I figured it was grounded because it was in the tank and then tanked to the frame.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Doesn't the sending unit sit in a big O-ring on the top of the tank?
Right. Right, exactly. Yes, there's an O-ring there, but you're right. Well, in the old one, there was an O-ring, but the tank apparently was grounded to the vehicle because there was only one wire coming off of it. I mean, yeah, there was only one wire coming off of it, and that would be a positive coming out of that insulated thing off the top of the old sending unit.
Okay, but wait. When you set it down on the O-ring, it's not grounded. But you've got the collar that goes around it, and then you spin the collar to tighten it up.
Right.
Okay, they're hoping that that's a good ground. But your Jeep is a 74. Your Jeep was made just after Jesus walked the earth. So we can't be sure that we're going to get a good ground on that ring, on that gas tank, without some wire brushing and without some sandpaper. Okay. So they're saying to you, just put a ground on it for me.
Gotcha. Okay. I just didn't want to put it all back together again. Foul something up.
But I understand. Just use the fuse, buddy. Just use that fuse.
Okay. Thanks,
right.
Mark. I appreciate it.
You betcha. You betcha. All righty. You know, when you wreck your car, I hope you're okay, but it's important because the problem starts then, especially if it's one of those situations, who pays for your car repair? Is it going to be your insurance company or the person that hit you? I want to tell you something. This is typically a scenario that I don't want anybody in my family to go through because you got all these people pulling on the same rope trying to get you to go left and right. First of all, you can go to anywhere you want. That's the Arizona law. You can go anywhere you want. I do not agree you should go to where your insurance company sent you. But Phoenix Body Works is up in North Phoenix. They have all the equipment necessary to measure your car and put it back to exact factory specifications. You're not going to leave there with a bent frame. You're not going to leave there with an alignment that can't be corrected. You're not going to leave there with tire wear problems. You're not going to leave there. Phoenix Body Works is going to put your car back the way it was, on time, and at affordable price with quality parts. They're insurance company friendly. They know how to work with insurance companies, but they aren't going to let the insurance company cut corners to save them money at your expense. They're strong-willed, polite, and firm. So Greg May, Phoenix Body Works, he's up on 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley Road. He serves North Phoenix, Anthem, and New River. So if you live anywhere in the valley, my advice would be to go see Greg May at Phoenix Body Works. It's important. You see, if I owned a body shop and all I did was ABC Insurance, do you really think I would say no to them? That's my fear. So just go to some place that doesn't owe 100% of their business to one insurance company, and you're best served there. You can also go to marksalem.com and check my list of good transmission shops, good tire shops, good mechanical shops, good paint and body shops. Everything you need is right at marksalem.com. Until then, wear your seatbelt, drive safely, don't drink and drive, and I'll see you here next Saturday, and God bless you.